This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The Research Triangle area of North Carolina is dotted with life sciences research and development companies, and Big Pharma operates sizable manufacturing facilities in surrounding counties. The life sciences industry is a hefty player in the state's economy, and its contributions are growing. Last year alone, the industry contributed an estimated $86 billion to the state. Joining us now to talk about the past, present, and future of life sciences in North Carolina is WUNC data reporter Jason DeBruin. Hello, Jason.
Hey, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. Life sciences, more than just pharma, right? What do we mean when we say life science?
Yeah, so it generally mostly means medicines. These are the drugs that you take, and then also the diagnostics to test, you know, what it is that's wrong with you. But it also includes plant science. So GMOs, for example, are sort of considered in the life sciences industry. So it is more than medicines, but it's mostly medicines.
All right. And give us some idea of the scope of life science industry in North Carolina.
It's big. So there's roughly 650 such companies throughout the state, mostly here in the RTP region, but certainly not only. They support about 63,000 jobs. So, again, you know, a significant player. And most importantly, these jobs pay pretty well. On average, they're about $87,000 in annual salary, which if you compare that to the North Carolina average across all industries, which is more like $40,000, $45,000, it's a good bit above that. So, you know, decent size and good paying jobs.
Yeah, and so the multiplier effect here is big, too. I mean, these are people who spend more, they pay more in taxes, et cetera.
Yeah, that's right. So the $86 billion figure that you cited earlier is accurate if you include the multiplier. So that's, you know, I'm a pharma employee, and I also buy a car. So, you know, my money that I make at my pharma job trickles through to the car dealership, et cetera, et cetera. But if you boil it down to maybe just the industry itself, they still pay about $2.2 billion, or they did last year, about $2.2 billion in local and state taxes. So, you know, not insignificant by any stretch of the imagination.
And you talked about some 650 businesses that would fall under that umbrella. How is that changing? Are we seeing an increase in the number of companies?
Yeah, absolutely. So this report comes from the North Carolina Biotechnology Center. They do it every 2 years. 2 years ago, the report showed fewer than 600 companies. So, you know, in 2 years, we've added 50 different companies. To be sure, it's not like each one of these companies employs thousands of people. In many cases, these are small companies, but still and yet, growing from 600 to 650 companies in 2 years is a decent growth trajectory.
No, but again, you think about the economic impact on the area where these businesses locate. They're drawing people who average $87,000 a year, so the housing for them, all of the amenities that you create for them, again, are going to have this kind of high end with a higher multiplier, so it expands beyond just what they spend.
That's the idea, at least. Yep, absolutely.
So let's talk about these businesses and why they locate here. I mean, I'm assuming that this is the industry, this is the new frontier in high technology and in industry where they meet. So there must be a growth nationally in this. Why do so many companies want to come to North Carolina?
Well, RTP, for one, has been growing and is sort of a foundational player, if you will. And then certainly we have the universities as well. Duke, UNC, and Wake Forest come to mind with medical schools, but you know, other universities like NC State and ECU are players in the life sciences as well. So you sort of have a, you know, a critical mass of really smart people that are doing really smart things. And so then companies want to be here because then they can potentially hire away these smart people to come work for them. Not I don't mean that in any, you know, vulture kind of way, but it's just right. You want to surround yourself with smart people. You need people in the life sciences industries that are, you know, biochemists and even MDs. And so you want to locate in an area where they can do their work. And then the other one is, you know, these universities bring in a lot of research funding. You know, in many cases, you know, a professor at a university will have some sort of an idea for, hey, I think I can target diabetes in a better way, gets an NIH grant, finds out that, hey, you know, I've got potentially some success here. Well, instead of furthering that development within the university, that professor will maybe form a team, start a new company, and then spin out of the university and then be sort of university adjacent, if you will, and you know, continue to develop whatever the drug therapy, whatever it is, outside the university itself.
Of course, the hope for those synergies was what was behind the development of RTP back in the 60s. It's been working pretty well for a long, long time in all kinds of high-tech industries. But now with the explosion in high-tech, let's go back to the 90s with the huge bubble and explosion. You know, the question is, does a place like North Carolina get left behind? And there's a new report from the NC Biotechnology Center that says the state science sector is growing faster than some of those other hubs.
It is. Let's be clear, this is as a percent growth. So if you compare yourself to California, Massachusetts, they have larger bases. So, you know, the growth trajectory is going to be a smaller percentage, even though it might be more in total terms. But yes, I mean, the answer is yes. We're growing at a faster rate, really, than many other, if not any other places in the nation. So that's a positive.
All right. So let's talk about this. We're talking about the North Carolina Biotechnology Center, which is trying to fill the gap in the state. Because I guess the missing link here, and what you'll see in the Boston area and what you see in Silicon Valley, is not only this research and development, not only the industry, but venture capital, the money to get this stuff flowing.
It's
right?
Huge. Yeah, it's huge. And that's probably the thing that is holding North Carolina back the most. The PricewaterhouseCoopers does a money tree report where it looks at how much venture capital investment is coming in. In the first quarter of this year, so first quarter of 2017, North Carolina took in about $288 million of investment. So a quarter of $1 billion. So that, you know, that's pretty good. Well, compare that to Massachusetts, there's more like $3 billion. Compare that to California, even just the Bay Area, you're looking at something more like $6 and $7 billion just for one quarter. So, you know, although $288 million is good, and certainly that ranks us in the top five of states, there's still a long ways to go before we compare to the Silicon Valleys, the Bay Areas, or, you know, up in Boston. To really compete on that same heft.
And you talked with Robin Deakle from the NC Biotechnology Center, and she talked about the risks and the timetable involved in this kind of investment when you're investing in life sciences.
I think even if you're developing an app and you put as much as 2 years, which is a long time for an app or a software product, if you put 2 years into developing something, you've only sunk 2 years' worth of costs. You could put 10, 15, even 20 years of a large development staff, 60 to 90 people, into developing a drug, and it could get to the end and not work. And that's just a much bigger risk to take than investing in a technology company that has a shorter product development cycle.
And that's Robin Deakle, the Vice President of Corporate Communications for the North Carolina Biotechnology Center. I'm talking with Jason DeBruin, WNC data reporter. So what inhibits and what encourages venture capital? Because you talked about the grants. They certainly come to this area because of our research institutions, our universities. But venture capital is the next level,
yeah.
Right?
And if I could maybe set up what she's talking about a little bit, is that if you're let's say you're developing a new app or even a new cell phone or something that's, you know, technology, as we consider it to be straight up technology, well, you don't have this long path of FDA approval. And so you can sort of come out with a first generation product, sell that a little bit. Okay, maybe it's okay. So you sell whatever, 50 widgets. Well, at least off those 50 widgets, you're getting some revenue that you can then invest back in your product and come out with a generation two, generation three. And, you know, finally you have an iPhone. Well, you can't do that when you're developing a drug. You literally need the full amount of money that it takes to fully develop a drug, because you can't sell a single pill until it receives approval from the FDA, which can take 10 years or more, and by some estimates, you know, $1 billion or more. Now, those are funny numbers in some ways, but in other ways they aren't, because it really costs a lot of money.
Well, and we have some object lessons here, a couple of high profile flops in this area.
And a big one that just recently happened, there was a company that was, well, still is based in Chapel Hill. The name of the company is Sempra, and they had developed a new antibiotic. I'm sure you've heard about the antibiotic resistance strain of, you know, bacteria that's really a threat to, well, healthcare across the world. Well, Sempra had developed a new antibiotic that really wasn't going to be subject to this. They got a lot of money. Investors were riding high, and they came all the way up to the FDA approval process and were rejected. And that was, you know, a really big blow to the company. It was a big blow to this area, certainly to investors, obviously. And so it just went to show once again the enormous risk that's involved in investing in these biotech companies and in these drug developers themselves, because you can have a really great idea, test something in literally hundreds of people. But then when you bring it to the FDA, they still say, no, there are still safety concerns. It's not safe enough, or it doesn't do what you say it does. And so we're going to reject it, and then everything down the drain.
Now, you take that risk all over the globe. So that is not place specific, right? What would
True.
It take to bring more of that capital, venture capital, to North Carolina?
You know, that's where you get the finger pointing. If you talk to the smart people that are here in the area, they will say that it's the venture capital fault, that the investors' fault for not bringing offices here. You know, investors do like to be sort of in the backyards of where their money is. If they're pumping hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars into a company, they want to be able to, you know, they don't want to have to fly across the country to see what's happening. But, you know, investors point the finger right back at us and say, yes, you have smart people and good universities that are doing good science, but what you really are lacking are sort of the biz development side of this where, you know, consider at Stanford, for example, a lot of smart scientists, but they also partner up with a good business school where they can really commercialize this stuff. Because at the end of the day, investors, sure, maybe they're happy if you cure cancer, but they're not doing it for some altruistic reason. They want to make a buck. And so what they argue is that sort of in our geographic area, although we have good scientists, where we've sort of lacked is the biz development side that can convince the investment groups that you're really going to turn a buck doing
now,
this as well.
Looming all over all of this and in the background is the politics of North Carolina, which has suppressed some business to this area. To what extent does the discriminatory policies by the North Carolina General Assembly and others act as a kind of a warning to businesses and to some extent capital, I suppose?
You know, I'm not going to say it won't have an effect because certainly it could. But, you know, the bigger threat, I think, is the NIH funding. So if there's cuts at the federal level to early stage scientific research, that means less money that's coming to the universities and to the scientists that are, you know, trying to find new diabetes treatment or what have you. And so if there's less of that going on, then there's fewer opportunities for that eureka moment, which, of course, down the line means fewer opportunities to spin out companies, less opportunity to bring in investment dollars, and ultimately, you know, less employment in the life sciences
industry. And by extension, funding for state institutions as well as the universities.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Although state funding doesn't go as much to this life sciences research, that is largely federal funding.
WUNC data reporter Jason DeBruin. Thank you, Jason.
Thanks very much for having me.
You can find out more on his reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we're going to talk about a new book that looks at parenting and genetic testing. And we'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.